You're going to hear that probably as you listen back a few times.
It sounded like...
a few times. ASMR. Does that mean again? It means...
Welcome to Smooth 101.69.
This one's for the ladies.
ASMR is a feeling of well-being combined with a tingling sensation in the scalp and on the back of the neck. It's an experience that is a response to gentle stimulus, which is why the gentle sounds
make people... What a great definition.
Well, hello and welcome to Crepes and Grain Podcast. My name's Teeny.
My name's Laura. So very good to have you here today.
This podcast is about our favorite thing in the entire world.
Alcoholic beverages.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, on today's episode, I'm really excited for this. We are going to dive into some essential vocabulary. I think our goal here today is to try and cover some of the words that maybe like you hear or you like on our podcast or you read on a label and they make you go, what? So
yeah, we're going to be presenting 5 words a piece, 5 related to beer and 5 related to wine. But before we get too wordy nerdy, Teeny, what you drinking?
What you drinking?
Today, I am drinking a Marzen by Fredonia Brewing, which is in Nacogdoches. Nacogdoches, Texas.
Nacogdoches. Some nice East Texas area there.
Gotcha.
I picked this beer up last minute just thinking like, oh, Marzen, that's a German word. Mm-hmm. It's common on beer cans, but like if you don't know what the style is, then you probably don't know what you're getting into.
Right.
And I didn't find it actually listed on Fredonia's website, so I'm wondering if they need to update that. But the Marzen style is also known as Oktoberfest or a Vienna lager. So its German heritage dates back to the 1840s. Marzen, the word, means March.
Okay.
And the style was historically brewed in the late spring to utilize, like, the remaining hops and malts from last year's harvest.
Oh, wow. How very thoughtful and...
industrious.
Yeah, country. Yeah.
Yeah, just, like, resourceful and non-wasteful, sustainable, all of those things. They also, like, didn't have the means to store any of those things, so it was really a special kind of beer.
Yeah.
Fun fact, in Germany, a beer can only be labeled... Didn't we? We used to have a ding ding ding.
Yeah.
Cue sound effect, Ben. Yeah.
So, fun fact.
In Germany, the term Oktoberfest can only be used to beer that is actually brewed in German or in Munich proper.
Oh, okay.
So,
wow, like champagne.
Yes, exactly. And I thought that was cool. But in terms of taste, these beers are usually like as malty as they come. The hops are used to balance the beer, but not to stand out in any way. And they've got like this beautiful caramel nose. This beer specifically had a wonderful, robust, frothy head. Huh. It's got this really like dark amber hue, totally opaque. Overall, just smells like a wet brew house, like just like the type of when you think quintessential beer smell.
Yeah,
like grainy, malty. Give that a whiff.
You like it.
I like it.
Yeah.
I've been drinking a lot of malty beers recently, and, you know, they have their time and place. I feel like the ones that I gravitate towards aren't as normally sweet, even though they're sweeter styles. So we'll see how I feel at the end of this one. Laura, what you drinking?
What you drinking?
Well, today, it's less about the wine for me and more about the package that has come in. Because we are doing vocabulary today, I wanted to bring in a smaller format wine and talk about that. So I have Bellini's 2016 Chianti. And the reason it's special, you can see on the website when you go there, is because it is a half bottle, which is called a Dimmi, D-E-M-I.
Dimmi. Literally the cutest thing I have ever seen.
It's like the perfect for gift baskets or little, you know, like tokens. And you can get like higher end wines in these Dimmis too, which is kind of nice. You don't have to like commit to a whole bottle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sometimes.
So how big is this compared to a normal bottle?
So this is I'm going to do my math right. So 750 is a normal bottle. So this is half of that, which is like 375. Is that right? Yep, 375. And there's also one smaller than this called a split, but that typically refers to a single serving of champagne, which is relevant because today in our vocabulary terms, we will be competing in the split of champagne comes in later. But I do want to say a little shout out to the style of wine and the winery itself. So Chianti is one of Tuscany, Italy's most famous red wines. Mm-hmm. You know, those like under the Tuscan sun, rolling fields of sunflowers, romantic terraces, and fabulous red wines.
So beautiful.
It's named after the region for which it's grown and is typically made of at least 80% Sangiovese grapes. The other 20 can be like a blend of local or Italian grapes, Cab, Merlot, something to soften up Chianti, which is like a little astringent and harsh at times.
Okay.
The wine is usually bright, dry, tannic. It's red fruits with a little bit of earthy tobacco. And it's supposed to, it's meant to be paired with Italian foods. And
you know how much I love Italian foods.
Yeah, this wine definitely should be with the food. Stands up to some hearty flavors. And the winery itself belongs to the Bellini family, who have been holding the land for centuries there. And at the end of the 19th century, they began to produce wine and other produce. And in the 1950s, they began to distribute internationally. And the winery is still run by their family.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So very neat.
Are they like actually independently owned or they're just family owned?
You know, I didn't go that deep. I'm not sure. That's a great question,
though.
So
family owned businesses.
Yeah. So
I'm into it.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Well, so this wine is pretty tannic,
and
I
you
would
mentioned,
have to say.
Yeah. You mentioned tannins in the descriptions.
Yes, we did.
This episode was actually inspired by one of our friends. Shout out to Jen Alvarado. She is a big fan of grapes and grain and obviously of ours, but we were together one night in a bar. She was about to move to San Francisco, and I was like, what about the season? Like, what's your feedback? Or is there anything you want to know more about? Is there anything you want us to cover? And she literally took a bar napkin and a pen out of my purse, because I always have a pen. And
journalist.
Yeah. Hashtag journal life. And she, the first thing she wrote down on the napkin was WTF are tannins. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay, that's a really interesting question.
Yeah, and one we've gotten a lot, to
definitely.
Be honest. Yeah, so like I mentioned earlier, we're going to do the show game show style, and Ben's going to keep our points, correct?
Yes.
Shout out to Ben with Jack and Dorothy Studio.
Thank you so much for having us in today. And so five apiece. Yeah, so here we go. First one in. Teeny, define tannins for me.
I mean, I'm really with Jen on this one. From a tasting perspective, I know that tannins are what make a wine like sort of bitter and dry. Mm-hmm. But yep. I don't actually know like what they are.
Totally. Well, I don't know. I feel like that counts for a point.
What?
Well, okay. So here, Ben, you decide. I will objectively.
Admission of non-knowledge is a half a point.
Lies of omissions. Okay. So technically speaking, tannins are a naturally occurring polyphenol compound found in the skin, seeds, and stems of grapes. The longer the crushed grapes in its juice sits with the skins and the stems, the more tannins, these polyphenol compounds, are imparted into the wine juice.
Okay.
So certain grapes like Cabernet Sauvignon and Syrah or Shiraz have thicker skins and a darker color and have more naturally occurring tannins. So those wines are typically known as bolder. And they age well because the tannic compounds hold up over a long period of time. So it takes them a long time to break down, and that's why those wines lay down well.
That is amazing.
Yeah, and so a way, like you mentioned, you can tell if a wine is high in tannins is if it creates a drying sensation in your mouth or makes you kind of pucker up.
That's how I always associate it.
Yeah, but it's not like a sour pucker, like, ooh, it makes your mouth water. It's like a, like, ooh, my mouth is, ooh.
Like almost acidic, but not quite.
No, it's really more of like, so what tannins do is like they bond with like fats kind of. And that's why it's really good to have a tannic wine with like fatty foods like steak or something. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have a steak or fat in your mouth, it like bonds to your tongue like that. And that's why it's like it just. Bleh.
Cool.
Yeah. So tannins occur in other plants as well. You can feel the same kind of sensation when you drink like a cup of strong black tea.
Yeah, or I also recently found out that hops contain tannins as well.
Oh, yeah.
So what the tannins in hops do, obviously that's the bittering agent mm-hmm. and plant mm-hmm. in beer. They actually, those same compounds, they settle with the proteins mm-hmm. in the kettle when you're brewing wort. And that actually promotes clarity in the finished beer.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's an interesting play, tannin.
I know. Well played, well played.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, what do you think, Ben? Did she earn a point for that?
She gets a half a point.
Yeah, okay. You can keep half points. If you can keep, I'll trust your judgment.
Yeah. Okay, Laura, you're up next.
Okay, I'm ready.
What does IBU stand for?
Okay, I actually know this one because, you know, I love beer. And when I was drinking beer, my favorite style of beer to drink was IPAs.
Okay.
And IBU is it stands for International Bitterness Unit, correct?
Ding, ding, ding.
Yes. Yeah.
Nailed it.
Yeah. So, but aside from that, like, what does that mean? What is a bitterness unit?
Yeah, absolutely. So the IBU scale is basically a sort of Richter scale for a beer's bitterness or hop quantity.
Oh, yum. Okay. Yeah, so higher IBUs would be like the yummy, hoppy ones then.
Yeah, like the more extremely bitter ones. So if it's low in IBUs, you'll have styles that are potentially more malty or lighter in flavor.
Okay.
And then your more traditional hoppy styles will, and obviously the hop mentality can exceed 100 IBUs.
Right.
But those are going to be like hot bombs. So
yeah.
The IBU is actually a cohesive standard that has been adopted worldwide by brewers. And light beers such as Pilsners or wit beers, they tend to reside at the low scale or the low side of the IBU scales, generally less than 20.
Yeah.
And then, like we were talking, IPAs, they're way higher, all the way up to beyond 120. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right, you're up. Okay. You nailed that one.
Yeah. Did I? All right. Nice job. Well, thank you. Dust my shoulders off and get ready to ask you your next one. So I'm going to ask you a definition. Blank is the weight or texture of a wine in your mouth.
Body?
That is correct. Ding, 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 motherfucker.
Ding, 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 ding. Hell yeah.
So yeah, body refers to how viscous, like thick or syrupy, or how thin a wine feels in your mouth. And the words body and weight can be used interchangeably in tasting, so just keep that in mind. And the body depends on many factors. Alcohol, tannins, acid, how much sugar is left in that residual sugar after fermentation stops. And then just a way to think about it, comparison, like, and something you've held in your mouth before is like a skim milk, the way it feels in your mouth compared to like whole milk or half and half.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah. How like one is very watery and thin and the other is very creamy and thick.
I know. Okay. So this is also referred to as mouthfeel.
Yeah.
Did we
mention
that? People are always like, what do you mean mouthfeel? And I'm like, well, how does it feel in your mouth?
Yeah. So what's funny is like with milk, I have the easiest time in the world, but with like red wines, for some reason, I have a mental block with this one. So that's why I chose to define it, because that's like one of the ones that was really tough for me in the beginning.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now I'm sorry. She got a point for that one for show.
Woo-hoo!
For show.
Yeah, no,
I'm ahead by a half point.
Dang it.
All right, Laura.
Okay.
Blank is the process of adding hops during fermentation to increase the hoppy aroma of a beer without increasing its bitterness.
Is it just hopping? Like, is hopping adding hops during fermentation?
Hopping is adding hops during the boil.
Oh, okay. Then, I'm not sure. What is this?
Dry hopping.
Oh, well, that's awfully specific. Dry hopping. Okay, so say that all together again. Dry hopping?
Dry hopping is the process of adding hops during fermentation to increase the hoppy aroma of the beer without increasing its bitterness.
I see. So in like the first step to get the smells instead of the second steps where you get the...
No, so the first step is to add it during the boil when you're extracting the bitterness.
Gotcha.
So after fermentation, or after that, when you enter fermentation, it goes down to a lower temperature and you add hops.
Wow, okay.
So you get more, because at a certain temperature, you're boiling different compounds out of the hops.
Okay.
At a lower temperature, you're getting things that add more to the aromatics.
Oh, I love that. How delicate.
Yes. And so...
That makes me have a newfound appreciation for really, like, floral-smelling IPAs.
Right? And there's also a technique called wet hopping. Do you know about this?
I don't.
Okay, so most hops are kiln-dried. So what you do is you pick the hop and then you dry them in a kiln.
Yeah.
Basically, which is like an oven.
Yeah.
And then wet in this case refers to hops that have not been dried yet and are freshly picked. So for that reason, if you see a beer that's labeled wet hopped or fresh hopped, as they're also called, that's typically brewed in the fall right after the harvest of hops.
Yeah.
So why is this important? Hops maintain different oils and acids that are broken down at different temperatures.
Okay.
Boiling converts the alpha acids in the hops into iso alpha acids.
Oh, okay.
Because of isomerization.
Oh, right. We've mentioned that in other episodes.
To create bitterness.
Blowing up those iso alpha acids.
Yeah. The dry hopping brings out the aromatic qualities.
Okay. Cool.
Now, it's also a little risky because that also means you're adding hops.
I like it. Well,
you're adding hops that aren't going to be sanitized in the boil.
I see. That is risky.
It's a little
like drinking
risky.
Unpasteurized milk.
Right. But for dry hopping, there are a couple like specific types of hops you might want to use.
Okay. Which ones are they?
This isn't like a Bible type
hard
of rule. You can use whatever you what you want. But like low alpha acid ratings. Mm-hmm. So like if they have a low amount of alpha acids, they will turn into less bitterness. So you'll like Cascade or Crystal or Willamette, East Kent Goulding, Fuggle, very favorite hop.
Fuggle is real.
Saws, Hallertau, stuff like that. Now, fresh hops are less concentrated, so it takes more of them to achieve the same flavor as a beer made with dried or pelletized hops.
I don't know. There's just something about using like fresh hops that sounds so nice.
Yeah, I mean, they're like, they're grassier. They're more plant-like. There's like a lot more green flavor. Yeah.
So actually, I've always wanted to get photos of hops for our website because I have taken the photos for it. And all the only hops I found are like dry and compressed, and it just looks like swag.
We should.
I mean? It looks really,
yeah,
really
let's
gross.
Go find a hop farm in Oregon
really
and see if we can shadow them for harvest.
Let's go this fall because I'm going to try to get a job there working vintage anyway. So let's try it.
All right.
Okay, Pinky Sarah.
Pinky Sarah.
Remind you.
Mwah.
Okay.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Okay, you're up.
Okay, right, I did not get a point for that one. I failed that one. That's a shame. Okay, shake it off. Teeny. Define balance in wine.
Balance. It's almost this like
elusive unicorn.
Yeah. You can't really describe it. How would I describe it? Balance is basically sort of an overall, like, sensory experience of what you're supposed to get from a beer. Balance is the optimal goal for a beverage that balances its flavor profile.
Okay. I would say that is correct, but a little vague.
It's super vague. It's like you'll know it when you'll feel it.
Yeah, if it's balanced, you'll know it.
Okay, fine. I will not take a point for that.
Well, to springboard off of that, yes, balance is a great sensory experience because pretty much five main elements are balanced. We're talking about the acids, the sugars, the alcohol, the tannins, and like the amount of water.
Ooh, okay.
So to break each of those down, acidity occurs naturally in the grapes, the acids, or it could be added depending on the winemaker. Too much acid will make your wine sour and make your mouth pucker, but in the drying sensation like we talked about with tannins. This, if it's acidic, it'll make your mouth like water and like ache
right
in the corners.
Yeah,
and just like you'll have a lot of water around your mouth if you swirl it in your mouth. And not enough acid, and your wine will be kind of like flat and flabby and
flabby,
not very interesting.
My favorite wine descriptor.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites too.
Flabby.
Sugar. Okay, so sugar in a grape also occurs naturally, and it increases as the grape ripens and remains on the vine. And then acid decreases as more sugar increases, just by the way.
Oh, so they're like yin and yang.
Yes.
Cool.
So a winemaker must decide the correct time to harvest for that perfect harmony. And the main purpose for sugar is to be converted into alcohol by yeast. So any sugar left after the fermentation stops is called residual sugar and leaves a sweet taste in the wine.
Mm-hmm. Same with the beer.
Right. So the term dry versus sweet refers to the residual sugars when a wine is dry. It's low in residual sugars.
That's awesome. Residual sugars in beer, they remain because like of the type of malt you use, whether or not like the less fermentable types of
sugar
malt
structures.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's how that remains.
Very interesting.
They don't ferment all the way out.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
The next one is alcohol. Alcohol is a byproduct of yeast eating sugar. Alcohol is what makes you feel all warm and fuzzy after you drink it. And too much alcohol in the wine and it'll taste.
You don't say.
Yeah.
You don't
warm
say.
Warm and happy. So too much alcohol in your wine or whatever you're drinking is going to taste hot. It's going to taste like it's like burning.
Ooh, Chad.
And you'll also know because you'll get drunk really fast. Tannins, we discussed earlier, the natural compound in wine grapes. They're also in woods and barrels. So tannins can also be imparted through the barrel aging process. And that's what causes a drying sensation in your mouth. It also creates structure like acid. And too much and your mouth will be uncomfortably puckered. Ooh. And your wine will be astringent and not enough. And your wine, again, will be flat. And then water is the last thing. Water makes up 85% of a bottle of wine. And that's all I have to say about that.
Ooh, I got you beat.
85%?
Yeah.
Water makes up 90% of a beer. So
Well, there you go. Water, the true backbone.
It really is. We should do an entire episode about water.
Water is important.
No, yeah. The water is insanely
really
important.
We should do an episode on that because even like in baking and pizza making and stuff, people are very persnickety.
Hard, soft, minerally.
Oh, yeah. Lay it down, baby.
I was going to say, where does California get their water? I mean, it's like, that's a whole.
I don't know.
Most.
I mean, with all that wine being produced.
You're having some
there.
Water issues over there. I don't know.
Right?
No idea.
That's a great question. Yeah.
That's one we'll try and Watergate. Get to the bottom of.
Why don't you, Ben, why don't you send in a listener mail?
Yeah.
And then we'll answer that in an upcoming episode.
I'll pay for that subscription.
Okay.
I've got one more word for you before we take a quick break.
Perfect.
So, Laura, define carbonation.
Oh, that's my favorite thing about beverages. It's the fizzy, fuzzy, fun, puppy part.
Yes, that is exactly what it's in the dictionary.
Perfect. So, yeah, I looked it up earlier.
Point for Laura.
Yeah. Nailed it.
So carbonation is, yes, something that happens in a beverage. It is also a tasting note that refers to the amount of carbon dioxide in a beer or really any beverage.
Yeah.
A lot of carbonation means a beer is bubbly or fizzy like soda.
Mm.
And then low carbonation means that there are few bubbles and like a smoother texture.
Yeah.
Different styles of beer warrant different amounts of carbon dioxide.
Okay.
So when you're brewing a beer, there's like an optimal one. Like, there's not a set, we got to hit this carbonation level.
Yeah.
Carbonation is also directly related to the foam on a beer, which is also called the head.
Yeah.
If there is more carbonation, there will be a frothier head.
Okay.
And of course, there are other elements.
Frothy
element. Frothy.
Yeah.
Frothy head. Of course, there are other things that play into that. On the opposite end of the scale, if you put a beer on nitro instead of carbon dioxide, so you take some of the bubbliness
away. Oh, yeah, I like when that happens,
yeah. Yeah, there is going to be little or no carbonation because the beer
is
being
almost.
Yeah, it has this like silky, smooth, full body aspect.
Yeah.
And then if you consume beer from a cask or what's also known as a firkin, that will also have no carbonation because it's not served with any additional pressure.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they call cask ale in England real ale as opposed to fucking fake ale. No, I don't know what it's supposed to.
Is that what real ale in Texas is referring to?
I think so. I mean, it's a tradition carried over from that.
Huh, okay.
So cask beers, they're also served warmer because that typically you serve certain styles in casks that work well with warmer flavors and lower carbonation.
Okay.
So you wouldn't put like a fizzy, like to equate it to champagne, you wouldn't put like a champagne into a cask.
Right.
It would be like a, not like a, like a bright and bubbly pilsner. It's more of like a darker or roastier type of flavor profile.
Totes. Okay, cool. Well, gosh, I'm feeling smarter already. Let's take a quick break.
Break.
Hey, y'all. Thanks for listening to Grapes and Grain Podcast. We love creating this show for you, and we hope that you guys enjoy listening to it, too.
That's right. And if you're a retailer or a producer and would like to have your product featured in our What You Drinkin' segment,
What You Drinkin'?
Send us an email at grapesingrain@gmail.com. That's grapes, the letter N, grain at gmail.com.
And of course, find us on patreon.com/grapesandgrain if you'd like to pledge a monthly contribution to help us keep doing this.
Cheers, y'all. That was a really mean joke. I'm just kidding.
Hey, run it fast and cut it quick.
We did get a couch out of it. By God. Well, welcome back from the break, guys. Where are we standing on the score, Ben?
Right now we have Teeny at 1.5 and Laura at 1.5.
What?
Really?
Is it neck and neck?
It is neck and neck.
We did not even plan that. This is so suspense building.
Because on the carbonation, you did give a bit of a whimsical answer.
And it wasn't substantial enough
and
for you.
And it was just, the content was a little shallow.
I mean, he is the ref. No one's paying him to be the ref.
No, nobody's paying. You seemed very confident, yet I kind of thought.
I mean, her delivery is really convincing.
Good delivery.
I will give you that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But so we're
all
tied
right.
up. Head to
okay.
head.
Tied up. All right.
Well, we've only got a couple more questions. So, all right, Laura, let's get down to it.
More vocab words. Okay. I'm going to give you a definition, and you tell me what that word is.
Mm-hmm.
The act of gradually pouring from one container to another without disturbing sediment.
Decant.
Oh, God. I thought I was going to get you with this one for what? Sure. Yeah. This is, that is to decant is what that means. The decanting is the act of gradually pouring from one container to another, not just in wine and science in general, without disturbing the sediment at the bottom.
Cool.
So, yeah, this happens for two. When you decant a bottle of wine, you're going to do it for two reasons. Number one, like we stated, to pour the top of a bottle off the sediment at the bottom. And also to aerate the bottle of wine, which means to mix oxygen into the wine.
That's what I thought was important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've done it. Like, I don't have a decanter. I very rarely use an official decanter. But yeah. I've done the thing where it's like, hey, pour it into two large glasses.
Yeah.
Like, make sure it aerates.
Really, yeah, even opening, the bottle of wine before you have it or, you know, pouring the glasses on them, sit there into a decanter. Some people don't use decanters at all. They just, like, pour it into the cups.
What does the decanter do?
So, just as you pour it in, it like oxygen mixes in with the liquid as it like splashes into it. And then it just, kind of what you would call opens up a wine. Oxygen bonds with other like molecules in it and you get more of the aroma and like more of the flavors kind of unfold and really I don't know, the like tough wines like Italian reds or something like big, bold, structured wines you want to like let open up and breathe for a little bit.
So they can sort of like evolve a little bit and
mm-hmm.
sort of like
finish.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
and yeah.
How long do they decanter?
Oh, so usually when you decant a bottle of wine, it's like for like an hour or so before you have it. It just depends really on the style or what. How you know intense your wine is.
So are you supposed to do it with every single bottle of wine?
Not really. So decanting for sediment, is only most commercial wines filtered. So you're not really going to decant any of that. If you buy like a boutique or a high end bottle of wine that's bottled with sediment in it, you definitely will. And you do this by holding a light behind the bottle as you pour it, and you just use the shoulder of the bottle, that like little rounded edge,
uh-huh.
to just like catch it. And you just stop pouring as soon as you can
cool.
see the sediment collect in that little shoulder as you pour it.
Is that actually like a manufacturing design?
Yeah, yeah, totally. That's intense.
I had no idea.
yeah. So, and then what else was I going to say about that? Oh, if decanting for aerating the wine, it's not every wine either. Like I said, just like the bigger ones that you want to open up, release volatile acids and it'll soften the wine. At least an hour. You could even like leave a wine open for a couple of days, really. And then when too much oxygen starts getting into it, you know, because it starts tasting a little funny. A little sour. So
you
want to
drink it before a couple of days, though.
Yeah,
but you can like recork it for a couple of days.
About, like 3 days. Yeah. As with oxygen, like mixing it. You know what I mean?
I mean, I've definitely like.
Not ideal, but yeah.
I've done like.
You wouldn't want to open it up 3 days before dinner. You would want it like an hour before dinner, hour or two before dinner.
But if you didn't finish
the bottle, you could still like, have it in the next day or two.
Perfect.
And then, that's it. Not every bottle.
Okay.
That's all I got for that.
Decant.
Cool. Good job. You nailed it.
Yeah, she got like.
It was a one word response, but she was so confident.
Well, it just like, I have, that's one of the only things that I've done with wine that I think is. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, Laura, I'm going to give you a definition.
Okay.
So the term blank refers to any non-malt source of fermentable sugars in beer brewing, though it's also often used in a negative context to describe a lack of quality in, quote, macro brews.
Oh, okay. Say that again. Say that one more time.
The term blank refers to any non-malt source of fermentable sugars in beer brewing. Though it's also used in a negative context to describe a lack of quality in macro brews.
I would guess like dosage, because that's what it is when you add sugar to wine bottles.
Ooh, I feel like that's a comparable maybe comparison, but it's definitely not the word.
Okay.
The term is adjunct.
Okay, so that just like tickled across my tongue and I almost said it, but... I see. Adjunct.
The adjunct.
In the native context, selective quality.
So adjuncts.
I see. Okay.
They kind of get a bad rap.
Macaroos. Yeah, it makes
so
sense. Okay.
A lot of like the light lagers that are associated with sort of like the macro brew sort of popularity. The term adjunct is like closely associated with that because they feel like they use subpar ingredients in their brewing.
Gotcha. Like fillers kind of.
Correct. But the term adjunct can refer to anything that's not malt.
Okay.
And it's not that they're considered fillers, but they're usually they're different grains that affect the texture of the beer rather than the actual flavor of the beer. So things like unmalted wheat, unmalted barley, rye, oats, corn, other grains, even things like honey and maple syrup and agave nectar, even fruits and pumpkins and other natural ingredients are considered adjuncts because they affect different things. So why, if they have such a negative context, why do people use them?
Right.
For simple sugars. They produce more alcohol and they offer a lighter body.
More alcohol.
Yeah. Wheats, oats, and rye are what are considered head grains. So they actually contribute to a robust head. And
That structure that holds.
Yes, a full body. Time. And then flaked oats can also contribute to the mouthfeel and give it more of a silky mouthfeel. So these are things that design a beer in ways other than the flavor.
Yeah. Well, I'm frustrated. I feel like I should have gotten that one if I had just digested that prompt a little better. That is adjuncts.
Sorry if I read it confusingly.
No, you didn't. That was just, you know, out of context. That's why this vocab is good. Run through. Run throughs.
Your turn.
Okay. My next question is to ask you to please explain the difference between aroma and bouquet in wine tasting.
Let's see. Aroma to start is like the sensory analysis, like what comes up into your nose from a glass of wine. A bouquet is the question mark scientific descriptors you use to describe the aroma. I don't know.
Okay. I think that was a valiant effort, but
I don't think that qualified. That was.
I don't think either of those are really correct, to be perfectly honest. But good try. Good try.
Okay.
So, to be very specific, the aroma, and so they both refer to the smell of wine. But the aroma is the primary smell. The aroma is derived from the grape variety itself. And it's primarily smells are associated with fruits and flowers and herbs.
Okay.
So that's the aroma, the primary grape smell. The bouquet is the secondary smell, which is derived from fermentation, aging, and the winemaking process.
Okay.
So aroma, fruit, bouquet, winemaking process is where the smells come from.
Can we like walk through a hypothetical if we're smelling? What do you have? What's your Chianti?
Yeah.
Walk me through the aroma versus bouquet.
Okay, so like the aroma, for instance, in a Chianti would be like the red fruits, like the cherries and like red raspberries. Where the bouquet would be the like spicy, oaky qualities.
Wood
induced. Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yep.
So awesome. No, I had no idea. That is really interesting.
Yeah. Not quite interchangeably on the street, so don't be a dick to, you know. But to be
that's the bouquet.
But to be quite specific, that's the difference.
Awesome. Okay, well, riddle me this then. Okay. I did not get a point on that one, obviously. Yeah. I'm like, you smell things and then you say things.
Yeah.
Okay, Laura, what is the difference between imperial and session? Oh. These two terms are sister terms.
Oh, are they? I couldn't have even told you that. Imperial and session. Well, I know they're both the types of beers. Imperial session. And imperial, I think, is like more of like a stouty, darker type of beer connotation. And a session is more of like a prohibition, not so alcoholic like style beer. But that's all I got on that.
I would say that you're close and that that represents what most people think. Okay. But imperial and session actually refer primarily to the alcohol content in the beer.
Okay. So no idea.
Yeah.
No idea.
An imperial.
Yeah. Not score a point on that one.
This is a tougher second round than I thought it would be. So when you brew a beer, typically, you know, a pale ale or an IPA, there are versions of that. Imperial is also known as a double.
Okay.
So that means it refers to a beer that's brewed at a higher gravity with a higher alcohol content and bolder ingredients. So an imperial style will often like
bring out bigger flavors. And in fact, the term imperial was said to be derived from beers that were sent to the Russian imperial court in the late 1700s.
Okay.
By contrast, Session is a lighter style of beer. The name refers to being able to have more than one in a session of drinking. So, like, typically beers that are below 5% alcohol and lighter in style.
Oh, wow. Okay. The more you know.
Right?
A good day drink.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd refer to that as, like, a session ale or sessionable.
Yeah. Oh, sessionable. Okay. Well, Ben, where are we at with points?
We are at...
Were you even paying attention?
Yeah.
Yes.
Because I definitely did not get that one.
The answer was yes.
Definitely did not get that one.
So Teeny is ahead 2.5, and Laura has 1.5.
Oh, a whole point. Damn.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. Well, bum, 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 bum. Lightning round. We each have one more chance to even this out. Okay. Are you ready? Any last words before I wipe your.
Laura,
wipe you the can, floor with your butt? Is that the term? Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah, oh, well, that was very, wow.
And wow. I love you.
Very, oh, wow, that makes me feel bad. Yeah, okay.
Well, I wish you the best.
Yeah.
Best wishes.
I was like Tanya Harding over here. It's like, good fucking luck. Okay, lightning round. Teeny, define botrytis.
That is my final answer.
Botrytis. You know botrytis.
I know botrytis? Well, from where? Like, how would I know him?
Okay, so remember that dinner at 60 Vines where that cute waiter brought us all those courses and then we had a dessert wine?
Yes.
And the dessert wine was very sweet.
Oh, it's so sweet.
So sweet.
It was, and I hated it, actually.
I believe it was like a Sauternes, was made Semillon grape. And what happens with these grapes is they leave them on the vines until they shriveled up at the end of the season and until gray and white fuzzy mold fungus stuff begins growing on the plants. And then, they harvest it. And then they cultivate it into that overripe grapes into wine. And they make a sweet dessert wine.
Called?
Anything like that. Sauternes that we talked about.
But, where does botrytis come in the mix?
Botrytis is the name of botrytis is the name of the mold.
Oh.
Botrytis is the name of the mold that grows on it. And when you do that for wine, and it doesn't just happen and grow and be botrytis, when you do it specifically to make it into wine, you call it noble rot. Noble rot.
That is way more attractive than botrytis.
Botrytis. Yeah, it sounds like, I don't know, some like
Greek mythology.
Oh, I was going to say like a futuristic rot. Drag act.
Actually, both of those at the same time.
Yeah.
Okay, lightning round, your turn. Laura.
Okay.
Define butt chug.
So gross. I know loosely what this is, only because you referenced it to an episode we may do in the future, but I believe it's to take a beer bong in your bottom.
That's at least what I know it as. I've never actually researched this at all.
It's so gross.
Some guy was just talking.
We don't condone it. Don't do it, listeners.
I just like was talking to one guy one day, and he was like, oh, if I lost the bet, I was going to have to do a butt chug. And I was like,
I don't like this.
Yeah. I was like, what is a butt chug?
No. I don't think there's any classy way to put
do
alcohol
not
up your bum.
Alcohol up your bunghole.
So who's
please
doing
don't.
The butt chugs?
Yeah. So
I have no fun. No. Okay. So she got it. What's our final tally?
Yeah, because, what's our score?
Okay. Well, spoiler alert. So, loser has to take a shambong.
Yeah. And lightning round is obviously worth twice as much.
Oh, okay.
So, Teeny, you're at 2.5, and Laura is at 3.5.
Yes! Oh! Squadhead! Come back, kid!
Well done. Okay.
All right. Well, cheers. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, here
loser
it is.
Loser does a shambong, and then cannonball. Winner
can
also
we,
does a
also
shambong.
Can we also just describe what a shambong is as you're doing it? It is basically a champagne flute with a straw at the bottom of it, and you take it like a beer bong.
It's glass.
It's
and it does not go in your butt.
Yes. No. Yes, that's me. Yep.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Cheers. Woo. Ah! Yeah. Good job.
It helps that the champagne is not insanely cold.
Yeah. Okay. Also, winner does a shambong.
Winner does a shambong. Yeah. And also studio engineer does a shambong.
Yeah.
Everybody shambong.
All right. I hope you guys are shambonging along with us.
Well, this was a really fun episode.
If you guys have any other vocabulary words that you see on labels or you've heard in this podcast that you're just like, what does that even mean?
Yes.
Please write us at grapesngrain@gmail.com. That's grapes, plural, the letter N, grain, singular, at gmail.com.
Yes, grapesngrain@gmail.com. Please do. And we're excited to answer any listener mail you have. And this was a fun one. This was prompted by listener mail, basically. So, we actually have our first listener mail, actually, from our good friend Sarah. Do you want to, let's read it here. And
yeah, absolutely.
Address our first listener mail. Insert celebratory music.
Okay.
Yeah.
So she wrote a letter?
She
wrote an email.
Envelope, everything.
Oh, good for
and
Sarah.
An email. Okay.
Okay, this first ever reader mail comes from... Yeah. His first ever reader mail comes from Sarah Flynn, who we happen to know personally. Shout out to our favorite Sarah with an H.
Yeah.
Interesting.
She says, subject line, tannin confusion. I has question. I have read that sulfites and additives can cause worse hangovers after a night of heavy wine drinking. But what about tannins? I had a really tannic but delicious wine the other night and woke up with the worst fucking headache. And my friend said it was prob because of the tannins. So, like, what the hell is a tannin? Thanks, y'all. Sarah.
Oh, well, Sarah, thank you so much for writing in, first of all. We did address what a tannin actually is earlier. The polyphenol found naturally in grapes that makes a dry puckering sensation in your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Also found in black tea and barrels, woods, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a really great question because a lot of people have it. So the long and the short of it is, like, no, tannins do not make you hungover. The only thing that's going to make you hungover is alcohol. You get drunk, you get dehydrated, you get hungover. But cheap wine do have a bad rap for causing extra headaches or like belly aches, and there may be something to cheap mass-produced wines having additives and, you know, just kind of fillers, but
things that could cause hangovers beyond the tannins. Tannins is more like a sensory sensation.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah,
it's a symptom of
alcohol.
The wine
is gonna be what makes you feel hungover. Yeah. So, well, you enjoy your alcohol out there, Sarah.
Keep on drinking your wine.
Yeah. I'll raise a glass of that. Cheers, Sarah.
Cheers.
Yay.
Thanks for listening to Grapes and Grain Podcast. If you'd like to be featured on our future listener mail segment, please email any questions, comments, or anecdotes to grapesandgrain@gmail.com. That's grapes, the letter N, grain@gmail.com.
You can also follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Grapes and Grain Podcast. Remember, that's grapes, plural, and grain, singular.
Find us online at grapesandgrainpodcast.com to see blog posts that go more in-depth to each episode. You can also download or stream the podcast there.
And of course, find us on Patreon.com/grapesandgrain if you'd like to pledge a monthly contribution. And a huge thank you to Jack and Dorothy Studios for having us in today. We couldn't do it without you, Ben.
Thanks so much for listening to our podcast today. Cheers.
Cheers.
What you drinking?